And welcome back to the Farmers Podcast. And I'm here today with my offsider, Noel Bubner. And today we'll be interviewing Sue Pratt. G'day, Sue.
G'day.
And Noel, a great rain last night.
Beautiful rain last night. Long way from getting the season back on track, but I guess it's got it on the tracks.
I'm going to call it a break only because it rained everywhere except Roaroo.
And yeah, bad luck for those, and sincere bad luck for those who've missed out. And I see out through the Mallee regions, southern Mallee regions, they didn't score too well either. So yeah, hopefully they're in line for the next lot. But yeah, certainly within a 50-80 kilometre K radius around Balaclava here, I think we're all feeling just a little bit more relaxed about how the season's travelling at the moment. So yes. Yeah, Huey, if you're up there, thank you, but don't stop now. We've got a taste for it, and we like what we're eating.
And once again, thanks again to Heatley Barbecues, our major sponsors, along with Elders Rural Services. And yeah, so well, I reckon we'll get stuck straight into it. Today we're honoured to have Sue Pratt, who is the ag teacher from Balaclava High School. So how about telling us a bit about yourself, Sue, where you're from and where you grew up? And
yeah, thanks, Andy. Yeah, I was born in Balaclava and was raised at Pinery on the 9 Mile there with my mum and dad and brother Andy and sister Gay, and had a very happy, carefree, wonderful childhood going to Pinery Primary School to start with, then Balaclava Primary, onto Balloch High, then onto university after that.
All right. So what was your earliest recollection from growing up on the farm?
My earliest recollection is not at the farm at all. It's at the beach, which is our other happy place. And I can remember very clearly, I think I was two, with mum and dad at West Beach.
All right. I think I've got a picture of that here on my phone. I'll have to show you afterwards.
We might have our photo for the podcast sticker, perhaps.
Maybe that could be the one we should use.
I hope not.
I was talking to your sister this morning, and it's a question I have to ask you. Do you eat peas now? Because she said she spent most of her early years eating your peas because you weren't keen on veggies, so she took one for the team.
Oh, good on her. Yes, I'm very keen on my veggies these days. Actually, that has a direct link to the only miserable memory I remember from my child is my dad smacking me once only, and that was because I didn't eat junket. It's the most disgusting stuff ever invented, and I filled my mouth with it, ran outside to spit it out, and Dad followed me.
I got busted
and I got a smack on the butt for that, and that's the only miserable thing I can remember from my childhood, so that's pretty good.
Very harsh, Bob.
Other than that, though, Dad, my happy memories from childhood, probably around the farm, is sitting on the back of the ute and spotting horehound. As a very young kid, I could spot a horehound from 100 miles away. So I just loved getting out with Dad. That was my favourite thing, to get out in the ute, go and check the sheep.
I think we've all done an apprenticeship on horehound, haven't we? It's fairly prolific around here. Did you have any pets?
Yeah, we always had sheepdogs, obviously. And my first pet was actually a cat that Robbie Saint gave me. So we were in year three. I think I was probably his girlfriend at the time. And he gave me a white cat, beautiful cat, had it for years. That was my first pet.
And what was its name?
Yogurt. What a dumb name for a cat.
Listen, call it Junket.
Junket, yeah.
It was never going to be Junket.
Have you gone back to Junket, tried it again as an adult?
No need. Why would you?
And, yeah, exactly. Why would you? Very fair call that. You touched on where you studied. Can you tell us a little bit more about the university studies? Were they involved?
Yeah, well, I was never, ever going to be a teacher. That was definitely off the list. I wanted to be a psychologist. And I started my Bachelor of Arts at the time, and I had to pick one science, and I picked biology, which I had hated at school. And I struck a series of fantastic lecturers at uni and fell in love with biology. And by the end of my degree, I thought, well, I actually don't want to be a psychologist anymore. So I topped up with a graduate diploma of education. And by that stage, I'd kind of worked out I was going to be living at Blyth, and I needed a career that I could put into action in the country. And so I did become a teacher, and I've never regretted it. It was the best decision I've ever made, but it certainly was not on my radar to start with.
Okay. So you originally you were going to be a science teacher?
Yes. So my first part of my career was science and biology, bit of maths.
And a little bit of maths. I seem to remember you trying to teach me how to learn maths. I'm not very good at maths,
so
I don't want that to be a blight on your teaching career. But I do struggle a little bit.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. I've forgiven you.
I think we'll blame Herb Bray for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just like didn't finish it off properly. Things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, in the middle of my years, I did a Bachelor of Special Education. I did that via distance ed from Flinders Uni. And so I switched to being a special ed teacher for a while, which I also really loved. And then I had a break for being at home with my kids. And when I came back, I did a bit of science again and a bit of special ed. And then our ag teacher, Ruth Arakawi, retired. And at the time, we couldn't get another ag teacher. There were no graduates that year. There was virtually no movement within ag teaching in the state. And so the principal, Kim Mason, tapped me on the shoulder and said, would I consider being the ag teacher? And I said, too right, I would. I was not going to pass up that opportunity.
Yeah.
So it was a really good opportunity to reinvigorate the program. And we've got great facilities, so I knew I would have plenty to work with, and I'd got a lot of connections in the district, I suppose, that I could call on to for some expertise for the areas that I wasn't so strong in. And, yeah, it was a really good decision.
Mm, yeah. So how long ago was that?
That was in 2007.
Okay. So
that was my first year teaching ag.
Right. So how long have you been teaching?
My first year of teaching was 1986, and that was at Clare High.
34. So you said you weren't good at maths. Well done.
No, well, I was.
I said it was touching on 40 years, but it probably being a little bit unfair. You did spend some time at university, so.
Let the record show that Andrew has put in the notes here 40 years. and I've put a big question mark alongside that. But as it turns out, Andrew, you weren't that far off the mark.
No.
We are all just mother time waits for no man, does it? It just keeps on marching on.
That's right, yeah. I think I'm the third longest serving teacher at the school. At Balaclava now.
Behind Sally Cowan.
Only the third.
Sally Cowan would be the longest.
Yes. And Karen von Zeden.
Karen von Zeden.
Mm. Okay.
Sally was there when I was at school.
Yeah, but she taught me.
She was probably there when Sue was.
Yeah, she taught me.
Sue's only not much older than me.
That's right.
We won't say how old that is. So what changes have you seen in ag teaching since you've been doing that?
Well, in general teaching, things have changed enormously, of course. We are much more student-centred. I think we were always very curriculum-centred to start with, and we just delivered it whether it suited the kids or not. But we certainly try and match our curriculum to what our students need and also for their own special learning needs and that sort of thing. So that's definitely a big change over time, and that's a good change too.
That's got to take a lot more time though, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And how do you have that time available?
Yeah, you just have to make it available, and that's probably the other big change in my teaching career is just the amount of out-of-hours work you've got to do.
Yeah.
That certainly has changed a lot. And some of that's very necessary and really pays off big dividends in the classroom, but some of it's just administrivia and that drives you nuts.
Yep.
That's the only downside of teaching is all the paperwork and stuff you've got to do to keep things, keep the department happy.
Ag has always been very hands-on.
Yeah.
Still is, by the sounds of things. I don't know that chopped the heads off the chickens like they did when Ruth, but
we do not chop the heads off chickens at school anymore. I think if
why not? I've got to ask, why not? I mean, it's a part of life.
Well, it's also illegal now to kill chickens to sell them.
Laws,
So we've got a fantastic chook abattoir at Kapunda that we use, but yeah, if you're just doing it for your own use, you can kill them yourself. But if you're going to sell them, and we're all about profit.
Farmers markets on Thursdays,
correct?
3:30 Apex Park.
Okay, right.
Somebody's looking for a fresh bird.
2:30 actually, not 3:30. You'll miss the boat if you get there at 3:30.
And you'll miss the boat anyway because this is going to go up about 3 weeks after. Or is it on every week? Is it every Thursday? Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. I apologise. Sorry. Mm.
Yeah, so in answer to your initial question, I think if you can keep it as practical as you can, it's certainly much more engaging, and there's always kids who just love getting outside and will happily shovel whatever I put in front of them till the cows come home just to burn off a bit of energy, and also they learn differently that way if they can get their hands into it and actually have sheep right there. If you're going to teach them how to age a sheep, so much better to actually do it with a sheep rather than just out of a textbook.
Yeah.
So, we're lucky that the facilities at the school let us do that.
But do you do on-farm visits as well?
Yep.
Load everyone up in the bus?
Yeah, as much as we can. We've been visiting the Niawi Michaels forever, and they are a fantastic support to us and give us really great access to their expertise and very grateful for that. Got a great partnership with Paul Daniel on Andy Parker's recommendation. Actually, I wanted to do some work on work health and safety, and that's a pretty dry topic, as you can imagine. And I wanted them to see a good practitioner that focuses on safety and has that as a really big priority for his business. And Paul and Mitch have just been fantastic in that department, and we visit there every year. They do a risk assessment on their big tractor and air seater for the kids and show them the processes they put in place. And I've been pretty happy to see some of my farm boys since then actually putting some toolbox meetings in with their own dads at home and making safety a priority too. It's just it's a dry topic, but it's so important. And for us to be able to see it in action with really good practitioners like Paul and Mitch has been very valuable.
Quite removed from farming myself these days, but all of those, the toolbox meetings, the standard operating procedures and things, are they all law on farms now? If you are having employees come and work for you, must you have all of that documentation in place and up to date?
I think for employees, yes, and that's where there's a bit of a grey area, because if it's dad and son or family combinations, they don't think of each other as employees necessarily, and so they might overlook some of those important steps. But it cannot be emphasised enough, because it just can create such problems for the business if somebody is injured. To have safety first, productivity will flow afterwards.
Yeah, yep. No, good point. Something there for everyone to think about, I think.
Absolutely.
What's a Year 12 student look like when he's finished Year 12 Ag, as far as...
What do you want, what do you want from them, male or female?
Yeah, well I have a good balance of males and females. Some years I've had only females in my class, and that brings a different vibe to it, changes the flavour of how you teach. But the main thing I really want them to be is open to new ideas and to be problem solvers. I don't need them to be experts at crutching or driving a tractor or anything, though we teach some of those skills as they go, but they're all going to head off in different pathways, and you can't prepare them all perfectly for whatever pathways they're going to be. So I would really like my kids to be open to thinking and able to look up new ideas and follow them through and think about things in an innovative way, look at how technology can be involved. So that's my ideal student, is somebody who's willing to try new things and be a problem solver.
Pretty well supported, the ag courses at Balaclava High. Like, how many students would you have on average per year?
Yeah, so my Year 12 classes vary from probably the most I've ever had would be 18. And a couple of years I've had three or four. This year I've got six students, and we actually combine it with our Year 11 class to make sure that it'll always run a Year 12 class, but sometimes it's combined with the Year 11s, and that works really well.
That's got to be only a good thing for the Year 11s, doesn't
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah. They tend to step up because they deliver things at the Year 12 level. The assessment's a little bit different for the two year levels, but that's a really positive combination in a lot of ways. But as far as support from the hierarchy at the school too, it's fantastically supported. The leadership at the school under Sonia Pringle is very keen for ag to be a feature and to be well supported financially as well, and in some schools that's not the case, so I'm very grateful for the fact that they do put resources into the program, and they see it as a really important part of our programming at Balloch.
So you're going to take over cropping the entire school soon? You've taken off some of the oval there, and that's going into crop this year, so...
Yeah, well, we'll want to take over the World Parks if we can. But no, we'll leave them a little bit of oval at some point. But we have taken over part of the gym oval. It was not functioning as a lawn anymore, so it might as well be growing a crop for us.
Absolutely. So you're heavily involved as an ag science teacher in the ag science, what's it called? The ag science, ag teacher association.
Yeah, the Agricultural Teachers Association of South Australia.
Yes, and I believe you've just received an award.
I have just received an award.
Congratulations. Yeah,
thank you very much.
And what's that award for?
It's called the Excellence Award, and it's one that ATAZA presents every 2 years at their state conference. So this is only the third one presented. So it was an award we introduced three conferences ago. So, we had our conference in the Adelaide Hills this year at Harndorf, and at the dinner on the Thursday night, they surprised me with presenting me with the Excellence Award. So it's, I guess, recognition for leadership I've shown at a state level in curriculum development in agriculture. So it's not so much for my work in the classroom at Balaclava. None of them have ever seen me teach in the classroom, really, but it's more about the curriculum development work that I've done and, helping to run conferences and mentoring younger teachers and supporting teachers to improve their programs in other schools.
Are there still changes to the curriculum you'd like to see put in place?
Yes,
oh, there's
definitely.
A fairly you should have seen her face and eyes light up then. I think she's got a few ideas. Anything definitely. That you can share with us at the moment, or is it are you still campaigning behind closed doors to get the changes made?
Well, if I had a magic wand and could wish for something, I'd have an agricultural curriculum officer for the department. So we don't have that sort of role in the department for specific subjects of support, and I would love there to be somebody that could go around to schools and support ag teachers as they're...
They have it for all other...
No.
No?
So it's not in all the metropolitan schools at all?
No.
No, I'm thinking like math, science...
No.
No?
No. So at the moment the education department is... committing a lot of funding to writing curriculum resources for every subject area, and I've actually just finished a stint writing for agriculture for years 7 and 8, which is a fantastic experience. And my biggest problem was having to contain it to 5-week units. I just had ideas, so many ideas and weeks, things that I wanted to include, but we had to have a limit on it, of course. But I'm really thrilled to bits that the education department is prioritising curriculum development for all subject areas, not just ag, but also very pleased that they've identified ag as one that needed some support.
What others?
But I would definitely love there to be somebody in that role, because a lot of ag teachers, at the moment we've got one ag teacher being trained this year in the state, and so there's a desperate shortage of ag teachers, and so often they're seconded from other areas, like the science teacher gets sucked into doing some ag or the home ec teacher or whatever, and they don't necessarily come with a lot of skills in the area, so they've some schools are really floundering, and I would love there to be somebody who could go around and help them get their programs up and running and humming along.
What other schools are doing ag? Well, obviously a lot of the rural schools are doing ag. What schools apart from Mowbray and Adelaide are doing?
I think there's about 54 schools in the state that deliver dedicated ag programs. Every school in the state is supposed to deliver food and fibre content. It's part of the Australian curriculum, but I suspect there's a lot of schools who don't have anything included, and if it is, it's embedded in something like geography perhaps, or maybe even in their home economics programs. But as far as actual ag programs, there's about 4 or 5 schools, mostly a regional. So in the city, yes, it's Urbray, and then it's pretty much all private schools, so Westminster, Scotch, Ross Trevor. Then you get up into the Adelaide Hills, there's certainly schools in the Adelaide Hills that deliver good ag programs, but Urbray is our lead school, and under some really good leadership at the moment, they are providing some good...
Are they still providing a lot of ag at Urbray, or is it a lot of tech as well now?
Oh, it's a bit of everything. Yeah. It's a big school, Urbray, now. So I think it's about 1,200 or 1,300 kids. But, they've got very strong ag programs.
Is Urbray at a point where it's turning people away? Because there's too many people wanting to get in?
I don't know the answer
to that.
That's
what we'd like to not think is happening, isn't it?
It's certainly very well supported, and they're leading the way with things. 2 years ago they started an Ag Careers Expo with Ag Communicators led by Belinda Kay, and that was a brilliant night. So there's hundreds of people came and visited with looking at careers in agriculture particularly. So there were companies like Ramsey Brothers and Elders and Landmark, and it was bigger than Ben Hur. It was brilliant. And they would have had it again last year, but obviously COVID shut that down. So they've got it planned again for August this year. So that's the sort of leadership that Urbray can show. It's very beneficial.
You've been teaching for a long time. What's the best piece of advice you've been given by another teacher, or what is it, or a person, or somebody that's influenced the way you teach or your attitude to education?
Well, I think probably... starting with Mum and Dad, actually, education was always a big priority and highly valued in our family. So I've had that ingrained in me right from the start. My brother and sister both had university educations as well, so I knew that it was important and that it could offer really interesting careers as well. So from that point of view, that was great advice and great guidance. But then as far as teaching advice, probably... some good practitioners early on telling you just to take your time to think about things. Don't panic, don't overreact. If a kid's playing up for you, just take the time to think about what's contributed to that. Don't rush into, you know, punishments and consequences. Give it a moment to think. And so I think I've probably trained myself to have a fairly cool head and not to get too panicky when things don't go well in a classroom, because it doesn't always go swimmingly. But I guess that having a calm exterior sometimes inside's gone a bit haywire, but exterior might be calm. So that, and the kids then have confidence that you know what you're doing, and that it'll all work out all right in the end.
Yep. At school, on your own farm, on your dad's farm back when you were a kid. Anything that stands out in your mind is that was just hilarious how that just went pear-shaped so quickly.
Well, I think my husband David would be able to tell you quite a few more stories.
I was thinking you're married to David Pratt. You should have a lot of stories.
I think he'd be able to tell you lots of good stories, that's for sure. I probably haven't got hilarious stories to tell you. I'm sorry to disappoint you with that, but it's just all really happy memories. Like with the heaslips across the road, we had such great fun, and you know, sliding down the sandhills on a sheet of corrugated iron. Think what could possibly go wrong there? But we managed to all survive that. But yeah, probably our own kids actually. A few things like reaching into a drum of sump oil and coming out looking a little worse for wear. That was one of our nephews actually. And you know, various adventures with dogs and go-karts and things like that on the farm. But I think you're the luckiest kid in the world if you can grow up on a farm and have that freedom and the trust to go out and look after yourself for a few hours. And, yeah, it's all happy, happy days for me.
Yep, couldn't agree more.
They've got lake frontage at her parents' house too when she was younger, didn't you?
We sure did, and we had lakes there for a while, so yeah. with the Loch Ness Monster and a wait for the ferry sign at the front of Slippy's driveway after the floods in, that was about 82?
Yeah, and 70, yeah, in the 70s, 72 yeah. or 3.
No, it was after that because I was, it was in the latter part of my high school. I think it was 81 or 82.
81, and I reckon. Wasn't 82 a drought?
Yeah, it's happened a couple of times.
Yeah.
Dad would be able to tell you in a heartbeat. But, lots of very amusing signs appeared overnight when Slippy's house was cut off from floodwaters.
What, I guess I'm going to drop Andrew in this one. No. He asked me to ask this question. on your farm at home, what is your most unreliable piece of equipment that you recall having around the farm, and why is that piece of machinery, David?
No, David is the most reliable and absolute 100% credit to him. He could get anything going eventually, and we had some pretty ordinary machinery at times. I find our front end loader pretty daggy to drive. The steering on that's pretty ordinary.
Power steering? No power steering.
Well, it's in inverted commas power steering. Sometimes you've got to do all sorts of interesting things to get it started. So that would be my bane of my existence probably.
Yep.
I have seen that one driven home by our neighbours after a fairly interesting party too. Graham Wandle drove it home all over the road. So it's done its service. It's a good piece of equipment. And we've had it forever. Literally the whole time I've been married to David, we've had that same front end loader.
What brand is that?
It's a Chamberlain.
Well, of course.
C670.
Oh, that would have awful steering.
It
would
be horrendous.
Be just spinning that wheel trying to catch up all the time.
That is exactly
and then it'll
right.
whip back on you.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
But it will run forever.
Yeah, it clearly is.
Yeah.
So you're a teacher.
Yep.
You have a lot of teachers have lots of holidays. Everyone knows that. So you would have had a lot of great holidays over the years. And
definitely.
Any favourites or?
Well, as a kid, Port Elliot was always our family favourite. So we had a caravan park site right on the foreshore at Port Elliot, and just you cannot beat that spot.
Literally, you could fall out of the tent into the water. Literally. That was how close. Yep.
That's exactly beautiful. Right. And with the Parker family and the Wilsons and various other Owen identities, many, many happy days there. Once I married David, we went to Wallaroo for holidays, and I thought it was the end of the earth because there's not a wave to be seen.
No.
But I've come to appreciate Wallaroo over the years, and now I love our annual holiday there.
Look forward to your trip back.
Yeah, for sure. But if I could pick a spot to go for a holiday, I'm at my happiest if I'm camping, and probably at an outback waterhole, somewhere like the Diamantina River, Birdsville, with a pair of binoculars in my hand, and Dave and Cherie Smirlik parked next to us.
That was the other question. So you're a bit of a twitcher?
I am a bit of a twitcher. Yeah.
Bird watcher?
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. People laugh at me when I say that, but it's a lovely hobby, and it's one that's sort of evolved from trips to Darwin and WA, where the bird life is just extraordinary, and gradually picked up an interest in it. And
any favourites you've seen along the way?
Birds, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. What's your favourite bird?
Oh, I think it's always a good day to see any of the raptors. So eagles and hawks. I do love to see that. And the pinnacle for bird watchers is the grey falcon. It's very difficult to spot. And David and I did spot one last year. coming home from Birdsville. So that was pretty red letter day. Yep. Even my kids understood how excited I was about that. So, but yeah, any bird that I've not seen, so we call them lifers if you haven't seen them before, and that's always a bit of a thrill. There's plenty still left on the list.
Michael Greenshields from Balaclava, he does a podcast on birding.
Well, there you go.
So there, shout out to Michael, just giving you a bit of a plug. But yeah, what's it called? The Birder's Guide with Michael Greenshields. Yeah. So there you go. You have to listen to that one. He's been doing that for just before COVID, I reckon he started.
Yeah, he's up to about 50 episodes or something, I think. So, yeah.
Well, that'll keep me going on my drive to school
each day. Once you're listening to us, you can listen to Michael.
I saw an emu yesterday.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't get too excited about that.
Noel has got emus in his front yard.
No, this was one in the wild.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so that was, you know, inspired. Yeah.
Did that one come up to you? Because yours wouldn't.
And emus all bouncing and running together. So, yes, I felt very patriotic when I saw all that.
I saw a shag in our swimming pool. Sue's laughing. I'm talking about the bird variety.
Yeah, what you do in your private life, we don't know.
I kind of wish I hadn't said that.
But birding is a very portable, cheap experience, and it's a lovely way to appreciate the Australian environment. It's fantastic. I love it. It's a good hobby. It's good, sort of meditative in a way. When you're out and you're concentrating, you're trying to listen to the calls and things like that, it's very therapeutic.
So you have to listen for calls as well.
Yeah, and I'm a bit rubbish at them. Cherie Smirlik is the bomb with those. She's my best offsider because she's really good at the calls, and together we like to identify them.
So do David and David do this too, or do they stay back at the campsite and drink beer?
Sometimes that is the option they pick, but they don't admit it, but they're actually pretty good at spotting them themselves. Yep. And my David is pretty keen on photography, so he tries to trail along behind me and take photos of whatever I've seen. So they indulge us really nicely.
Oh, well done, boys.
Yeah, it's not all beer and Skittles.
No.
A bit of photography as well.
David always says whenever we go on holidays, he spends half of it in reverse because we'll see a bird and then we'll go back up together. So it takes us a while to get anywhere.
That's funny. If you could go in time, go backwards or go forwards, as far back or forward as you could to see anything occur in history or in the future, what would you be interested to go and have a look at? Probably have a look at the dodo before it became extinct, I guess.
Oh, yeah, that would be a good one, wouldn't it?
Oh, that's hard to catch.
That's a really tough question. I don't really have any hankerings to go back in time. People say about wanting to go back to their school days or whatever. Life's fantastic. I've got plenty to look forward to. I probably couldn't pick a particular era.
Agriculture in 50 years, what's it look
like?
Yeah,
I can't imagine. It's changed so much in my lifetime. When I tell kids at school, you know, how my dad was a farmer when I was a child, and bag wheat and lumping fertiliser across on a plank from the back of the truck to the combine, things like that,
No walk health and safety then.
No.
Straight over top of the drill harrows, plank of wood and a sack truck.
But you were fairly active with your dad on the farm at seeding
Yeah, absolutely. Mum was very heavily involved, and certainly whenever we were free, Andy Gay and I would all help out with everything. So, you pick up a lot of good skills that way, but also just that work ethic side of things. Very important that everyone chips in and helps out.
Yep.
And it's paid off career-wise for me because I had to pull lambs at school the other day. So, that was pretty good ag lesson for the year 10s.
Yeah, Kaylee told me that, yeah.
And it was successful? Everybody survived? And, okay, we're running out of time now.
Well, it was, I saved the mum. That was a good thing. Yeah, I was pretty happy with that.
Family of farmers. Gay married a farmer, you married a farmer, and Andrew's a farmer. So.
Yeah, every single member of my generation, of my family and David's family, are farmers. Okay. And many of the next generation too. So agriculture is definitely in our blood. And, you know, I've got some pretty good people I can call on if I've got a question that I can't answer. So, well, I'll just call my consultant at Oraru or I'll call my consultant at Karoonda or at Pinery. He's on speed dial.
Yeah,
yep. So, I've been very lucky to have such fantastic support in my career.
Best advice I was ever given was to use the resources you have available to you, and it sounds as though you've got plenty, and they're more than happy to come alongside you and walk you through any little tough patches that you might have.
For sure.
Which we all come across.
No doubt about it. And, you know, there's things that I want to teach my kids about that I haven't got any expertise in. So, you know, the pig industry is one classic. It's such an important industry in our district, but we did have pigs a bit when I was a kid, and David certainly did. But, you know, Paul Feggett, can you help me out with that? Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I'm really lucky to be able to call on people that I went to school with, like Paul and Rob Michael and what those guys, very willing to share their expertise.
That's great. Mm. That is really good.
Mm. Well, thank you very much. I reckon we could just about wrap it up there. Sue, thank you so much for your time. Unless there's anything else you want to say?
No, thanks, Parks. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
No, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Sue. Yeah. It's been fantastic to catch up. And, yeah, you've had a very interesting life since you failed teaching me at maths. All those years ago.
Once again, thanks again to Heatley Barbecues and Elders Rural Services.
Absolutely. No, thank you all very much. And, yeah, look forward to our next episode in the next week or so.
Giddy up.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Sue. Actually, what I picked up during that podcast. Thank you, Susie. Thank you, Andy. Thank you all. Ciao for now.